Thank you, Pramidita. Good morning. So this is a story I want to tell about hedonism, about indulgence, about the search for pleasure. Yeah? It's also about argumentativeness. So I'm basing it on two suttas in the Pali Canon. There's one in the Sutta Nipata, called Magandhya, and there's one in the Majjhima Nikaya, also called Magandhya. The Buddhist tradition says that they're different people, those two Magandhyas, but I don't believe it. I think they're the same person. They have the same name, the same views, and the same sort of slightly cantankerous relationship with the Buddha. So it starts off with, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to read bits of the suttas and talk about them. It starts off with Magandhya offering his daughter to the Buddha as a wife. Yeah. Magandhya knew what he was doing when he did that. He was provoking the Buddha deliberately. He was doing something that he knew would get a response, and he did. Yeah. The Buddha said, "No, I don't want your daughter as a wife." Which, if you know much about Buddhism, if you know much about the Buddha, that's not a surprising response, yeah, that the Buddha said no. Even the way he said no is not a surprising response. But my question is why? Yeah? Why is that Buddha's response? Why is that not a surprising response? So, what happened? Magandhya offers his daughter to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, "Even seeing the daughters of Mara, Tanha, Arati, and Raga, there was not even desire for sexual intercourse. What indeed is this, full of urine and excrement? I would not wish to touch her, even with my foot." So quite a strong response. Magandhya asks, why not? Yeah. Magandhya has got his own philosophical ideas. He's got his own idea of what practices. And he says, "If you do not wish for such a jewel, a woman sought by many kings of men, what sort of view? Life lived according to virtuous conduct and values, and rebirth into existence do you profess?" So he's asking the Buddha, you've got that attitude, you've got those, you behave like that, you act like that, what's the view behind it? He knows that views are behind actions and attitudes, so he asks the Buddha, what's the view behind the way you live your life? He wants an argument. The daughter's response was slightly different. You could say perhaps her response was a little more emotional. Basically, she goes off and murders 500 of the Buddha's chief disciples. But that's another story. So the Buddha answers Magandhya from a very high level. Yeah. He talks about not grasping. He talks about searching amongst views. Yeah. He talks about searching amongst practices. He talks about engaging deeply with views, with practices, and not settling down in them. So that's a question. Yeah? Do we really search? Yeah? Do we really question? Yeah? Do we have an open mind when we come across views, when we come across practices, when people suggest practices, when the Buddha or when your Buddhist friends, your Buddhist teachers suggest practices? Do you really question it? Do you really search? Do you really try it out? Yeah? Do we know how to search? So the Buddha talks about inner peace and he talks about purity. And his answer is very, it's like the Heart Sutra, really, his answer here in the Pali Canon. And I'll read the Buddha's answer. So he's offered the wife, the girl, as a wife. And she's the most beautiful girl in India. Yeah? Everybody wants her. The kings, everybody wants her. The Buddha says, no, I wouldn't even touch her with my foot. So Magandhya says, okay, what's your view? Why not? Why don't you want her? What's going on? Magandhya, said the Blessed One, nothing has been grasped by me from among the doctrines after consideration, saying, I profess this. But looking among the doctrines, not grasping, while searching, I saw inner peace. And Magandia says, those very decisions which have been formed, you speak of without grasping, sage. So the Buddha's got a definite position. Yeah, he's got decisions, and yet he's speaking of not grasping onto views. Magandia's a little confused. Magandia goes on, this thing called inner peace, how is it proclaimed by the wise? And the Buddha responds, one says that purity is not by means of view, by learning or tradition, not by knowledge, or even by virtuous conduct and vows. Also, it's not by absence of view, or of learning, or tradition, or knowledge, or virtuous conduct and vows, not by that either. So it's not by view, it's not by absence of view. And discarding these, without grasping, calmed, not dependent, one would not long for existence. So unsurprisingly, Magandia is confused by this. And he says, if one says that purity is not by view, by learning, by knowledge, or even by virtuous conduct and vows, nor by absence of view, of learning, of knowledge, of virtuous conduct and vows, not by that either, I think his doctrine is foolish indeed. Some do believe that purity is by means of view. And the Buddha says, dependent upon views inquiring, Magandia, you have become infatuated in respect of what has been grasped, and hence you have not even the slightest notion of what I am talking about. Therefore, you regard it as foolish. The Buddha then changes tack. Yeah, he's talked about the middle way between holding on to views and rejecting views, holding on to practice and rejecting practice. Now he changes tack. He talks about conceit. So conceit means thinking of yourself as better than others, or as worse than us, or even as equal to others. Conceit means comparison of yourself and others. So he talks about his attitude to other people. He also talks about his attitude to pleasure, his attitude to attachment, and to independence. Yeah. Independence, it's very interesting. He also talks about his attitude to freedom. So I'll read the rest of the sutta from the Sutta Nipata. Whoever thinks himself equal, superior, or inferior, he would dispute on that account. But one unshaken in the three modes of self-conceit, for him there is no equal or superior. Why would that Brahmin say it is true? Or with whom would he dispute, saying it is false, in whom there is no idea of being equal or unequal either? With whom would he join in dispute? Leaving his home, wandering homeless, not making acquaintances in a village, free from sensual pleasures, showing no preferences, a sage would not engage in disputatious speech with the people. A great man would not grasp and dispute about those views, free from which he should conduct himself in the world. Just as a lotus with a thorny stalk, which grows in the water, is unsullied by water and mud, so a sage professing peace, not being greedy, is unsullied by pleasure and the world. One who has knowledge does not become proud because of a view or thought. In Buddhism, knowledge means clarity. Knowledge means seeing things as they actually are. Yeah? It means seeing with clarity. Knowledge is awareness in Buddhism. One who has knowledge does not become proud because of view or thought. Of course not. There's just clarity. There's no need for view or thought, for he is not like that. He cannot be influenced by action or learning. He can't be influenced. He's just clear. He is not led into clingings to views. He doesn't need views. There are no ties for one who is devoid of perceptions. There are no illusions for one who is released through wisdom. But those who have grasped perception and view wander in the world causing offence. So that's the first meeting between the Buddha and Magandhya. You could say it's unsuccessful. Yeah? Magandhya doesn't understand where the Buddha's coming from. Sometime later, they meet again. And I'll read a little bit of that story. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living in the Kuru country, at a town of the Kurus named Kamasadamma, on a spread of grass in the fire chamber of the Brahmin belonging to the Bhadravaja clan. Then, when it was morning, the Blessed One dressed, taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Kamasadamma for alms. When he had wandered for alms in Kamasadamma and had returned from his alms round, after his meal, he went to a certain grove for the day's abiding. Having entered the grove, he sat down at the root of a tree for the day's abiding. I love those little descriptions of the Buddha's life. Yeah? Just his very, very simple regular lifestyle. Then, the wanderer Magandhya, while walking and wandering for exercise, went to the fire chamber of the Brahmin belonging to the Bhadravaja clan. There, he saw a spread of grass prepared, and he asked the Brahmin, "For whom has this spread of grass been prepared in Master Bhadravaja's fire chamber? It seems like a recluse's bed." "Oh, Master Magandhya, there is the recluse Gotama, the son of the Shakyans, who went forth from the Shakyan clan. Now, a good report of Master Gotama has been spread to this effect. That Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, the teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. This bed has been prepared for that Master Gotama." And Magandhya says, "Indeed, it is an ill sight when we see the bed of that destroyer of growth, Master Gotama." So, then the Buddha turns up. I think he knows Magandhya is there. And the Buddha goes straight to the point. Yeah? He engages with Magandhya very directly on Magandhya's main concern, his main issue. And the Buddha says, "Magandhya, the eye delights in forms, takes delight in forms, rejoices in forms. The ear delights in sounds, the nose delights in odours, the tongue delights in flavours, the body delights in tangibles, and the mind delights in mind objects. It takes delight in mind objects. It rejoices in mind objects. All of that has been tamed by the Buddha. It has been guarded, protected, and restrained, and he teaches the Dhamma for its restraint. Was it with reference to that that you said the recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth? And Magandhya says, yes, it was with reference to that, Master Gotama, that I said the recluse Gotama is a destroyer of growth. Why is that? Because it is recorded in our scriptures. So the Buddha is talking about restraining indulgence in pleasures. Yeah? He's talking about being free from pleasures. For Magandhya, what growth means is new experiences, yeah? New pleasures. I think these suttas are particularly relevant to us because Magandhya is a hedonist, like we are, like most of us in this society. Yeah? Growth means new experiences, new pleasures, more, better. Yeah? For the Buddha, growth means knowledge. It means clarity and wisdom. Yeah? For the Buddha, growth means inner peace and means freedom. Now, if you want clarity, if you want wisdom, you need peace. Yeah? You can't see clearly if you're blinded by passion. If you want wisdom, you need freedom. If you want to really understand, you need to be able to question everything. You need freedom to question everything. To do that, you need not to be attached to everything, to anything. The vicious circle of samsara is that we can't see clearly because we're blinded by passion. Yeah? And we take our emotions so seriously because we don't see them clearly. So it's a vicious circle. We don't see clearly because we're blinded by passion. And we take our emotions seriously because we don't see it as it actually is. Yeah? The Buddha talks of purity and inner peace, but not of grasping. And the Buddha expounded this in the previous sutta, in the Sutta Nipata, but it was straight over Magandhya's head. Yeah? So now the Buddha has another go. Yeah? They've met again. The Buddha again tries to communicate the same stuff, but he uses Magandhya's values. He uses pleasure. He talks about pleasure. Yeah? The Buddha explains his position using metaphors and using autobiography. So I'm going to read bits again from the Majjhima Nikaya. Firstly, the Buddha says, imagine something really good. Yeah? Imagine something really good. And he uses autobiography. He tells a bit of his own life story. Magandhya. Formerly, when I lived the household life, I enjoyed myself, provided and endowed with the five cords of sensual pleasure, with forms cognizable by the eye, with sounds, with odours, with tastes, with tactile objects that are wished for, desired, agreeable and likeable, connected with sensual desire, provocative of lust. I had three palaces, one for each season. I lived in the rain's palace for the 4 months of the rainy season, enjoying myself with female musicians, and I did not go down to the lower palace. On a later occasion, having understood as they really are the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandoned craving for sensual pleasures. I removed fever for sensual pleasures, and I dwell without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other people who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, being devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, burning with the fever for sensual pleasures, indulging in sensual pleasures, and I do not envy them, nor do I delight therein. Why is that? Because, Magandhya, there is a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. So imagine something really good, and then imagine seeing through it. Yeah? seeing that it's not what it was cut out to be. It isn't going to give you the satisfaction. You spend a lot of time and effort trying to get something. When you get it, you realise, actually, it's a bit rubbish. He uses another metaphor. Imagine something really good. In this case, it's the similar thing of a rich man enjoying the worldly pleasures. But then imagine something much better. There's a famous story of Nanda and the nymphs. The Buddha met this monk who couldn't concentrate in meditation. He was always having sexual fantasies. So the Buddha took him by the arm and took him up to the higher dhyanas, where he met the dove-footed nymphs of heaven. And when he came back down to earth, his fantasies just seemed ugly and gross by comparison. So in this sutta, the Buddha takes the same metaphor. He says, imagine you've got everything the world could offer, but then imagine heaven, the heaven of the 33 gods. It's so much better. It's so much more pleasurable. Would you envy going back to that world? Sangharakshita uses an image, which I think is absolute classic way of bringing this into our own lives, or into our own experience. Imagine a child playing with toys. You've got a young teenager playing with Lego. But then he discovers girls. The Lego might be really good Lego, but he's found something more interesting. He doesn't need to renounce the Lego. It's not difficult to stop playing with the Lego. He's found something much more interesting. So the question here, what is the difference between the worldly pleasures and the divine pleasures? What is the difference for us? What is the difference between samsara and nirvana? That's a real question. What is the difference? We need to know. If you gained enlightenment now, you'd still be here. You'd still have a body. Sense input would still be pretty much the same, but it'd be very, very different. What would be different? Very important question. So the Buddha's used those images of imagine something good and then see through it. Imagine something good, imagine something better. And he uses six images connected with that. Imagine the good and then something better. But he also uses three images connected with something really, really bad. And then release from that bad thing. So I'm going to read the first instance of the Buddha talking about a leper. It's strong stuff. Leprosy is a pretty terrible disease, which you still see in India. Basically, the fingers rot, the toes rot, the hands and the feet rot. Even the nose and the ears can rot. All the extremities can rot. Maggots, worms. Grim, painful, not good. Suppose, Magandia, there was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails. There's a pleasure in scratching wounds. But it's worse, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. For a leper, the pain is so bad that putting the hand in a coal fire seems to alleviate the pain. So he's scratching and he's burning because of the pain. Then his friends and his kinsmen would bring a physician to treat him. The physician would make medicine for him and the man would be cured. He would become well and happy, independent, master of himself, able to go where he likes. I love that description of health. I'll read it again. He would become well and happy, independent, master of himself, able to go where he likes. He's healthy. Then, going where he likes, he might see another leper with sores and blisters, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. What do you think, Magandia? Would he envy that leper for his burning charcoal pit or his use of medicine? Magandia says, "No, Master Gotama. Why is that? Because when there is sickness, there is need for medicine. When there is no sickness, there is no need for medicine." Socrates uses exactly the same image. Socrates was around about the same time in ancient Greece. And he uses exactly the same image. He says he meets someone who thinks that satisfying pleasure is better than not satisfying pleasure. It's better to get hungry and then have a good meal. It's better to have an itch and then scratch it, he says. And Socrates says, right, okay, take that to its logical conclusion. So the man with leprosy is the happiest man alive because he can scratch to his heart's content. So, this is how the Buddha sees us. Yeah? This is the sobering thing of all this. This is the Buddha describing Magandia, describing us. Yeah? What are we doing? We're feeding our desires. We're feeding our dissatisfaction. We enjoy scratching ourselves. We enjoy creating itches so we can scratch ourselves. We enjoy our egotism. We enjoy building and protecting our pedestals, our status. We enjoy building walls, creating barriers between ourselves and others. We fight each other for possessions, for pleasure, for oil. We fight each other for status, for who's the best. Yeah? So the Buddha uses another image to try and describe this very situation. Magandia. Suppose there was a man born blind who could not see dark and light forms or the sun and moon. He might hear a man with good eyesight saying, "Good indeed, sirs, is a white cloth, beautiful, spotless and clean." And the blind man would go in search of a white cloth. Then a man would cheat him with a dirty, soiled garment thus, "Good man, here is a white cloth for you, beautiful, spotless and clean." And the blind man would accept it and put it on. We're like that, according to the Buddha. We're fooled. We've been cheated. What have we been cheated by? Yeah. According to the Sutta, we're cheated by our own minds. Yeah. We're cheated by our own ideas of what makes us happy. Yeah. What is the difference between samsara and nirvana? We need to have a goal beyond self-clinging. We need to have an idea of what the goal is. And we need to question everything. We need to question our experiences. What is it that makes us happy? What are our ideas behind that? What are our values? What stories do we tell? What are our interpretations of experience? Especially, we need to question, what are our actions? How are we behaving? Yeah? What are we doing with our body, our speech and our mind? And what is the effect of that? How do we behave? How does it affect us? Yeah? What is the effect that your life is having on you? That's the question we need to ask. Yeah? It's easier to see this in other people. Yeah? It's easier to see people chasing empty dreams. Yeah. But we need to look at it in ourselves. Is it really pleasure? Yeah. Just to go back to the start, why did the Buddha have that response to Magandia's daughter? What is the body? Yeah. What is our body? The body is a tunnel. Yeah. If you swallow a stone, it just goes straight through. It doesn't damage your body. It doesn't go into your body. The body is a tunnel. It has an outside and an inside. Yeah. The skin on the outside is dry. The skin on the inside is wet. It's a tube. What do? We push food past the inside of the skin. Yeah? The skin on the inside, we push food past it. It turns into slurry. And it comes out at the end in lumps. Yeah? That's what happens. Imagine you're in the park and you see some human excrement. Yeah? You wouldn't want to touch it, even with your foot, I suspect. Yeah? Imagine the park keeper comes along and removes it. You still wouldn't want to sit there. Yeah? So why do you want to touch the body that created it? The body that's covered in it on the inside? Yeah? Why would you want to touch that? That's weird. Of course, that's not to say that human relations aren't a good thing. Yeah? There's a great value in human relations. But to feel attraction to a body just for its own sake is a bit weird. Yeah? There's huge mechanisms of biology, of hormones, of views, of sort of collective stories that we tell each other to make us attracted. Yeah? The Buddha's questioned all that. The Buddha's thrown all that out of the window. Yeah? The Buddha wants her to be well and happy, but he doesn't want her. Yeah? He knows that she's not pure. He knows that she is what she is. He is what he is. She's not what he wants to base his life on. Yeah? She's not what he wants. He wants something else. So if we want to do reflections like this, which as Buddhists we will quite naturally, if we do any meditation where we're questioning everything, we need lots of metta. Yeah? You need to have metta. You need to make sure that well-wishing is very, very firmly established if you're going to reflect on the true nature of reality. Yeah? You also need to keep an eye on, well, what is the effect of those reflections? If the effect of those reflections isn't liberation, isn't freedom, then you're doing it wrong. Yeah? These reflections lead towards a positive, loving response to the world. Yeah? If they don't, stop it, do more metta bhavana. Yeah? Very important to remember that. Yeah? The Buddha made that mistake. According to the canon, the Buddha made that mistake himself of encouraging people to do mindfulness without doing metta first. Yeah? Got to do both. So, the Buddha is offered the girl. Yeah? He says no. There's another way of relating to other people, to life. Yeah? The Buddha is offered a particular relationship with this girl. Yeah? A particular exclusive relationship, which he doesn't want. Yeah? There's another way of relating to other people, to life, that doesn't have that craving for sense pleasure. It doesn't have anything to do with status or respect, nothing to do with ownership. Yeah? Imagine a freedom of loving without selfishness. Yeah? Imagine the freedom of loving without wanting anything in return. Yeah? You can just give, give, give. Sangharakshita once, slightly cheekily as often, was talking about giving, and there's a Christian saying apparently you should give until it hurts, and Bhante said no, you should give until you swoon with bliss. Yeah. Imagine living a life where you can just give, where you can help without restraint, you can help without any strings attached. Yeah? You just respond to what's in front of you. You've got no preferences of your own. You can just respond to what's in front of you. There's nothing holding you back. There's a full-blooded, wholehearted response to the world. Yeah? So how? That's the question. Yeah. How? How do you go from a samsaric way of engaging in life to a nirvanic way? How do you go from basing your life on pleasure, like Magandia was, to basing your life on openness, on questioning, on engaging with what's in front of you without vested interests. And so Magandhya, the Buddha responds to this question. He says, and you've heard this before, so I'm repeating here, having understood as they really are, the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures, I abandoned craving for sensual pleasures, I removed the fever of sensual pleasures, and I dwell without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. Because there is, Magandhya, a delight apart from sensual pleasures, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior, nor do I delight therein. So he talks about wholesome states. Yeah. In Buddhism, ethics are a matter of refining our conscience, yeah, being more sensitive to the needs of other people, yeah, more sensitive to how the world affects us. Yeah. Wholesome. Yeah. I like that word. To be wholesome states. It means to understand the whole. Yeah. To understand that all beings fear pain. All beings want to be happy. That's the whole. Yeah. If you base your life on that perspective, it'd be very different. So how is this achieved? Yeah? How do we go from the samsaric to the nirvanic, from the selfish to the selfless? So we look at our experience, having understood as they actually are, the origin, the passing away. Yeah? So the origin, you know what gives rise to what. Yeah? How does it feel to give? How does it feel to be kind? How does it feel to be selfish? Yeah. There's that famous quote in the Bodhicaryavatara, all the world's suffering comes from trying to make yourself happy. Yeah. All the world's suffering comes from trying to make yourself happy. All the world's happiness comes from trying to make other people happy. Yeah. All the world's happiness comes from trying to make other people happy. So that's simply looking at that question. What is the origin of experience? What is the origin of happiness and of suffering? And Shantideva is saying it's that attitude of selfishness or other regardingness, respectively. What is the origin? What is the passing away? All things are impermanent. Yeah? We are all impermanent. The person in front of you is impermanent. Yeah? Their joy, their sorrow is impermanent. That means it doesn't have to be like it is. It can't be like it is ongoingly. Yeah? Can we make a little difference? Understanding the origin and the passing away. Understanding the gratification and the danger. Yeah? There is pleasure. There is pleasure in samsara. Yeah? We really need to understand that. If we don't understand that, if we don't respect that, our own needs for pleasure, yeah, we won't get very far. There is a gratification, there is also a danger, there's a limitation. Yeah. Pleasure seeking can tie us down. The Buddha was careful to avoid pleasures that could tie him down, yeah, that could limit his ability to respond openly, to go where he wished, master of himself, independent. Yeah. He avoided that. And there is an escape. Yeah. There is something better. We need a sense of the goal beyond self-clinging. Yeah. That's a point in Sangharakshita's recent little set of 10 points. The first one, we need a goal beyond self-clinging. We need to find that for ourselves. Yeah. What is it? What would it actually be like? What would my life actually be like if I didn't have this self-clinging? Yeah? You really need to think about that. So we understand the origin, the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape. The escape. Yeah? There is something better. better even than ethical conduct. Yeah. Buddhism isn't about becoming nice and happy. Yeah. Better even than ethical conduct. Better even than making an effort, yeah, than taking precepts. Yeah. What's better is just that total love. Yeah. Let go, if you can let go of all views, if you can let go of all idea of better, equal and worse, let go of all right and wrong. From the Sutta Nipata. Leaving his home, wandering homeless, not making acquaintances in a village, free from sensual pleasures, showing no preferences. Unsullied by sensual pleasures and the world, just as a lotus with a thorny stalk which grows in the water is unsullied by water and mud. Instead, there is just responding. Yeah? There is just spontaneous, compassionate activity. Imagine having no itches, yeah? No preferences, just responsiveness, just love. Yeah? So how do we do this? In meditation, we can touch these states. Yeah? What's the metta bhavana? It's a state of, we bring to mind loving kindness, we bring to mind that response to another being, loving kindness, and then we trigger in ourselves the three pleasures, yeah? liking, indifference and disliking. Yeah? We bring to mind someone who we feel attraction towards, someone who we don't care about, we're indifferent towards, and someone who we're averse to. Yeah? The purpose of this is to give us an opportunity of responding with positive emotion regardless of your likes and dislikes. Yeah? So in the metta bhavana, you're triggering your likes and dislikes quite deliberately. Yeah? And trying to be metaful at the same time. The Buddha can do this in totally extreme conditions. Yeah? He can respond with love totally regardless of his likes and dislikes. We meditate, we can touch that state. Yeah? We go on retreat, we can touch that state of an expansive heart that loves. Yeah? But why do we go on retreat? Why do we meditate? We go on retreat so that we can go home again. We meditate so we can stop meditating and turn back to the world and keep engaging with the world. We need to be wise in the world. There's no point in sitting on your meditation cushion and being wise and compassionate if you're not then going to get up and be wise in the world. What does that mean? It means be sensitive to the suffering of other people. It means be radical and be bold in your convictions. Yeah. Look for those states in meditation and then be bold with those states outside meditation. This is tough. Yeah. This is not easy. Yeah. I like going on retreats. And it's hard coming back and trying to keep a flavour of that, keep a sense of that, in my daily interactions with people. Yeah? Trying to live that. Trying to live what you can touch in meditation. Yeah? So how do we do it? Yeah? We examine our experience. We examine our views. We search amongst our views. And we try to live those views. Yeah? Try to put those views into practice. Try to put those meditative states into practice. How do we do that? We take precepts, we make precepts. We see if they work. Yeah. The precepts are simply attempts to work out the practical implications of the metta bhavana. Yeah. That's what the 5 precepts are, that's what the 10 precepts are. It's up to us to try to see if they work, to put them into practice, yeah. To question them, yeah. To question our lives in response to them. So how do we do this? We don't do it by cutting off our passions and cutting off our pleasures. Yeah? We do it by experiencing honestly our pleasures and our passions. Yeah? We experiment, we search, and we question. Yeah? The whole teaching of this sutta, of these suttas, is go for pleasure. Yeah? pleasure is the way. Yeah? But the higher the pleasure, the higher is the higher hedonism. Yeah? Magandia was basing his life on the search for pleasure. Yeah? But the Buddha saw him as being like a blind man wearing a filthy cloth, thinking it was clean. Yeah? The Buddha saw him as being like a leper enjoying scratching his scabs. And the Buddha has got the medicine to cure that leprosy. So we need to raise our standards. Yeah? Yeah, you can practice Buddhism, you can live your life, it's great. You can be happy to an extent. Yeah, don't be satisfied with that. Raise your standards. Yeah, don't just go for a good life, a happy life. Go for the supreme bliss. Yeah? The Buddha would be very disappointed, I think, if he saw how we just use his teachings just to make our lives go a little bit more smoothly. Yeah. He wants radical transformation. He wants us to change the world, to set the world on fire. Yeah. So I'm going to end just by telling a story of how the sutta ends, how this sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya ends. Suppose, Magandia, there was a leper with sores and blisters on his limbs, being devoured by worms, scratching the scabs off the openings of his wounds with his nails, cauterizing his body over a burning charcoal pit. The more he scratches the scabs and cauterizes his body, the fouler, more evil-smelling, and more infected the openings of his wounds would become. Yet, he would find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in scratching the openings of his wounds. So too, Magandia, beings who are not free from lust for sensual pleasures, who are devoured by craving for sensual pleasures, who burn with fever for sensual pleasures, still indulge in sensual pleasures. The more beings indulge in sensual pleasures, the more their cravings for sensual pleasures increases, and yet the more they are burned by their fever for sensual pleasures. Yet they find a certain measure of satisfaction and enjoyment in dependence upon sensual pleasures. Magandia, those recluses and Brahmins who abide or will abide free from thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace, all do so after having understood as they actually are the origin, the disappearance, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of sensual pleasures. And it is after abandoning craving for sensual pleasures and removing fever for sensual pleasures that they abided or abide or will abide free from thirst with a mind inwardly at peace. Then at that point, the Blessed One uttered this exclamation: "The greatest of all gains is health. Nibbana is the greatest bliss. The Eightfold Path is the best of paths, for it leads safely to the deathless." So Magandia likes that. He likes that verse. Yeah? He seems to be convinced. Yeah? But his understanding of that verse is pretty flaky. Yeah? He misunderstands what is health and what is nirvana, and he has no concept of the Eightfold Path, of any path. Yeah? He thinks he has health, he thinks he has nirvana. Yeah? And the Buddha points that out. Yeah? He points out Magandia's delusion, but the Buddha doesn't tidy it all up. Yeah? The Buddha doesn't then say to Magandia, he doesn't tell him, "Well, Magandia, what I mean, this is truth, this is health, this is nirvana." What the Buddha says is, "Practice, and you will find out for yourself." So the Buddha points out how difficult that's going to be for Magandhya. Yeah. He points out how this could bring a lot of trouble for both Magandhya and for himself. Yeah. And he uses the image of the blind man who has the dirty cloth being cured of his blindness. He'd become angry. First thing that would happen, he'd become angry at his dirty cloth. Yeah? He's devoted his life to that dirty cloth. Yeah? The Buddha cures him of his blindness. Be grief, be grim. So the Buddha warns him. He warns him a few times. Yeah? Do you really want this? And Magandhya keeps saying yes. Yeah? So the Buddha says, Magandhya, you have been blind for so long. You have been fooled and cheated for so long. If I were to teach you the Dhamma, that this is health and this is Nirvana, you might know health and see Nirvana, together with the arising of your vision, your desire and lust for the five aggregates affected by clinging might be abandoned. Then perhaps you might think, indeed I have long been tricked, cheated and defrauded by this mind. For when clinging, I have been clinging just to material form, to feeling, to perception, to formations. I have been clinging just to consciousness. With my clinging as condition, being comes to be. With being as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. And Magandhya says, I have confidence in the Master Gotama thus. Master Gotama is capable of teaching me the Dhamma in such a way that I might rise up from my seat, cured from this blindness. Okay, then, Magandhya, associate with true men. When you associate with true men, you will hear the true Dhamma. When you hear the true Dhamma, you will practice in accordance with the true Dhamma. When you practice in accordance with the true Dhamma, you will know and see for yourself thus. These are diseases, tumours and darts. But here, these diseases, tumours and darts cease without remainder. With the cessation of my clinging comes the cessation of being. With the cessation of being, the cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, ageing and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair cease. Such is the ceasing of this whole mass of suffering. When this was said, the wanderer Magandhya said, Magnificent Master Gotama, magnificent Master Gotama. Master Gotama has made the Dharma clear in many ways, as though he were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. I go to Master Gotama for refuge, and to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha. I would receive the going forth under Master Gotama. I would receive the full admission. Magandhya, said the Buddha, one who formerly belonged to another sect and desires the going forth and the full admission in this Dhamma and discipline, lives on probation for 4 months. At the end of 4 months, if the bhikkhus are satisfied with him, they give him the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu's state. But in this case, I recognise individual differences. And Magandhya says, and notice the difference here in Magandhya's attitude to the Buddha than it was at the start. Magandhya says, Venerable Sir, if those who formerly belonged to another sect and desired the going forth and full admission in this Dhamma and discipline live on probation for 4 months, and if at the end of the 4 months the bhikkhus, being satisfied with them, give them the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu state, then I will live on probation for 4 years. And at the end of the 4 years, if the bhikkhus are satisfied with me, let them give me the going forth and the full admission to the bhikkhu's state. Then the wanderer Magandia received the going forth under the Blessed One. He received the full admission, and soon, not long after his full admission, dwelling alone, withdrawn, diligent, ardent and resolute, the venerable Magandia, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, here and now, entered upon and abided in that supreme goal of the holy life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. He directly knew birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more coming into any state of being. And the venerable Magandia became one of the Arahants.